In Catherine May's new book, Wintering, she addresses those times of life when unforeseen circumstances derail you. Think an abrupt illness, the death of a loved one, a job loss, or, yes, a global pandemic. She calls these periods of dislocation wintering. What if, she asks herself, instead of feeling so much shame around failing during these times, instead of hustling so hard to keep up appearances, we gave ourselves permission to fall through the cracks and rest. Imagine it, a deep, full season of rest and retreat. Catherine May is the author of the new book, Wintering, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Catherine, a delight. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What brought you to the subject? And I guess we should probably even back up and begin with your definition of wintering.
Yeah, so wintering is a word I use to refer to the times in life when we fall through the cracks. So it might be caused by loads of different life events. You know, it could be an illness, mental or physical. It could be something like a divorce or a bereavement. It could be the loss of a job. But however it comes to us, it's this really brutal period of time when we feel very isolated, cut off, unable to act, unable to make progress almost. And I wanted to look at those times in life and kind of link them together and show how there's commonality in our suffering, that we think that we're all separately dropping through, but actually we've got a lot in common and that they're a very normal part of being human. And actually kind of a natural part of the life cycle. But I wanted to use the real winters, you know, the actual cold, snowy winters, to show that we can get great insights from nature into how to survive those times.
It certainly seems that while it may not have been the plan originally, that then this comes at the perfect time as many of us are forced to winter because of a global pandemic. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't plan for this, just to be clear. But I think actually the word wintering is really helpful for what we're all going through now. The only unusual thing about it is that we're all experiencing the same winter at the same time. I think that's quite a rare thing in our human history. But still, we're still feeling isolated. We're still feeling lonely. And also the nature of our individual winters are all different. So there's still that feeling of being very cut off and, you know, certainly physically cut off quite often from being able to actually see real people, which has been very hard.
Well, and that is such an interesting point because it affects us, not just the pandemic, but any of the things that you just talked about. They affect us all differently. So we all will respond to that in different ways.
Definitely. And I think there are, you know, the different reasons that the winter will cause that response. But our normal response and our normal advice in those times is to get together with other people. You know, like the most analogous situation we've had in the UK in recent memory is World War II. And everyone began by talking about wartime spirit. But actually what people did during that time was got together as much as they possibly could. And this is an experience of being forcibly separated from the people that we love, often in really painful circumstances. And that means that we all have to find our own way through to comfort ourselves, because I do think comfort's really important during these times. I don't think that it's a case that we have to, you know, just suck it up and have a really bad time. I actually think that the more comfort that we can find, the better we're able to endure this.
The closeness to the seasons and of you wanting to explore that, of this to be winter, a dark season by nature. And so talk about the connections to the winter that we know and the winter that we feel.
Yeah, so I should start by saying that I'm a massive winter lover. I know not everybody is, but I've always absolutely adored the moment in the year when
I agree with you. Yes,
get dark. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, do you? Oh,
yeah,
really
I love
good.
It.
There's loads of people that are horrified.
No, it's a great season.
I mean, I love snow. I love it when everything's frosty. I think that winter is a period of time that we have learned to ignore, actually, in modern life. You know, we turn the heating up, we have wonderful double glazed windows, we've got electric light, and we can let winter pass by without noticing it. And I feel that if we can learn to actually feel the winter a bit more, that that's really informative about how we survive the sort of metaphorical winters. But also literally, I do genuinely believe that encountering as much daylight as we can in winter, learning to feel the cold, can actually have really brilliant physical effects on it, you know, helping our sleep, helping our sense of rest and relaxation, helping to manage anxiety. It's a kind of dual message in a way, that it's about kind of a metaphorical understanding of wintering, but also learning to embrace winter itself.
It is fascinating because as you came to this and started to understand it, the natural world as we know it points toward winter. That as you write, the year kind of turned on its head for you, didn't it?
It did, yeah. I mean, I'd started to write this book before my life basically collapsed for a while. And I found myself writing through a period when, first of all, my husband became really dangerously ill with a really serious appendicitis. And then as he was in hospital, I began to realise that I'd been experiencing some quite serious symptoms of a bowel disorder for a long time. And then just as I was coming to terms with that, I left my lovely secure job. And my son had to be pulled out of school because he couldn't really cope with it anymore. So we had this year when we all felt totally, I don't know, isolated, frightened, cut off from the rest of the world, and like almost rejected by mainstream society. That's the way that it kind of gets interpreted, I think, by our minds quite often, that we've personally failed rather than a bad thing has happened to us. And so the book became a sort of account of that year while I was following the progress of the season. It wasn't the book I meant it to be.
But you were aware of how you were wintering as you were doing it. It wasn't something that you looked back on and realized what was happening.
No, and that's because I'd already planned to write a book that almost expressed my expertise in wintering. I felt like I'd wintered a lot in my life, and I'd got to the point where I wanted to share something about it. But instead, I found myself kind of walking through the winter alongside the book I was writing. And that meant that I could really dig into the very specific experiences of those different moments that make up a winter. You know, the days when you feel like you just can't do anything, the days when you feel paranoid that everybody's thinking that you're a sort of loser, the days when you just feel sad. I think all of those things collided for me, and it was really interesting to write them from the inside of that experience rather than to look back on them from a distance and make more sense of them, maybe.
So through all this, you are worried about your health, you're worried about your husband's health, you're worried about your son, you're worried about your job, you're worried about your well-being. So how do you do all of that while also trying to find a way forward and to be optimistic without falling into what seems a darkness is one way to call it, but a depression is another word for it?
Yeah, and I'd certainly fallen into those darknesses before that I'd found very hard to leave. But this time, and I think maybe it helped to, you know that I had to write something sensible about it, I endured it mindfully. I made sure I dug into experiencing those feelings and to, at the same time, experiencing the season as it passed. And by paying really close attention to the minute changes that were happening in nature, in the length of the days, in the phases of the moon, in the temperature, and the changes that were happening in plants around me and the animal kingdom, that meant that I found tremendous comfort, partly because it shifted my attention onto something fascinating and beautiful, and that helped me to cope. I experienced awe at the wonder of nature, even in very small ways. But it was also so instructive because the natural world is pointed towards winter. We kind of think of it as being a bit dead in winter and that summer is the season when it's really busy flourishing. But when you actually look into the biology of a lot of plant life, of insects like bees, of animals that hibernate, you realise that their summers are spent preparing for winter. The winter is the bit that they are focused on surviving. And so, I mean, I've learned very recently that you guys don't have dormice. So I probably need to explain what a dormouse is before I go into
it. Well, I will admit I looked it up when I came across it in the book. I have that feature where I just said look up and it showed me. But yes, tell us about the dormice.
Well, they're a kind of rodent, maybe in appearance most like a gerbil or a hamster, perhaps, with a long tail. So they're not quite a mouse. They're yellow. They're very, very, very cute indeed.
Yeah.
And I had the privilege of holding a hibernating dormouse during the research for the book. And what I learned was that those dormice spend all of their summer, they're only awake from May to October, and all of that time they are trying to lay on fat in order to survive the winter. So they are gorging on hedgerow fruit mainly, blackberries they love. And by the time the cold weather comes, they have, I mean, hugely increased their size. And it's all made up of this liquid brown fat, which they find very easy to burn through. And when I held this hibernating dormouse, what really surprised me, well, two things surprised me. One was how cold it was. It reduces its body temperature to 4 degrees centigrade, which is so close to freezing. And that is the lowest possible temperature it can get to so that it burns the least energy. But also it's squishy. You can leave fingerprints in a hibernating dormouse. So it's this thing that feels dead and alive at the same time. And they also snore in the most delightful way. And that's their way of keeping their lungs working. So this dormouse, despite the fact that it is stone cold and to all intents and purposes, you know, what you can see of it looks absolutely not alive, it's doing the most important job of its year, which is enduring those cold seasons. And as soon as it wakes up again, it will start preparing for the next one.
You know, for 35 years as a talk show host, it's the first time I've heard the phrase fingerprints and a hibernating dormouse. And I love it.
I have a video of it.
Absolutely love it. That's great. And the fact that their hibernation period is so long almost makes you, like, say, oh, well, give me some of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we would find that very hard to endure, but I think we can really learn from it because they cut down to the basics of survival and they know they have to. And we really struggle to do that now. We struggle to get into the mindset that we have to cut back sometimes. But actually, when we do cut back, we open up a different kind of a space. You know, we get some solitude, which we very rarely have. We have some time to contemplate, to let our minds change, to let change tick through our brains. And although we hate doing it and we often find that agonizingly painful and uncomfortable, it's such an essential thing for us to do.
So for the opposite of hibernation, you write that you started to embrace your insomnia. That was something that you said, okay, this is good. This is actually natural.
Yeah. And if you'd asked me a few years ago, I'd have said to you, I'm a terrible sleeper. I wake up in the night every night and I'm lying awake trying to get to sleep for 2 hours. And in the course of the research of this book, I learned that actually that was a very normal pattern of sleep in pre-industrial society. So before we had electric light, before we had clocks on every wall, before we had our iPhone that we could look at and it would tell us, you know, how many hours sleep we got and what quality sleep that was and analyze us. What the pattern of sleep was, particularly in winter then, was that people would go to sleep at maybe 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, sleep for 4 hours, and then wake for 2 hours in the middle of the night before going to sleep again. And they called it their first and second sleep. And that period of wakefulness in the middle of the night was known as the watch. And during that watch, people lived a very distinctive part of their life. It was seen as different to daytime living. It was a time when, you know, nobody would drop round, so you had complete privacy within your family. And people talked about doing things like having conversations with their close family, praying, meditating, smoking was a common one, contemplating life in general. I mean, also having sex. But it was seen as a very special valued time. And so I decided to adopt this. I decided that when I woke up in the night, I would just get up and embrace it. And it's been an absolute life changer for me. I now really look forward to that time. Nobody else in my house gets up. In fact, my husband's such a night owl that often he's just going to bed when I'm waking up in the middle of the night. But I spend some time reading, meditating, sometimes writing in my notebook. I don't watch TV. I don't switch my computer on. I don't check Twitter, which, you know, does me good. And it is such a valuable time for me. It's a very distinct mindset. Very comfortable, very cozy, very happy time for me. And the nights that I sleep through now, I really miss it.
So how do you react to summer and spring?
I hate summer. I resent summer. I mean, I love spring. I find spring very beautiful, but I am not good in the heat. So I am uncomfortable and grumpy throughout the summer. But I also find it very bland. Like, even the photographs I take that I put on my Instagram feed, I'm never happy with them in the summer. I don't like the summer light. It's too yellow. I love the cold winter light. And I just really look forward to it. I think I'm the opposite to most people on that front, but maybe not to you.
No. Well, the book is lovely, and it's just a real pleasure. The name of it is Wintering. And Catherine, I thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to meet you and to speak with you. I thank you very much and wish you all the luck in the world with the book.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, Catherine May is our guest. The name of the new book is Wintering. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.